My name's Michelle, and this is Ben, and we are going to talk to you today about how you can save your businesses from total and utter catastrophic destruction, or, you know, a slightly less drastic scenario. We're going to teach you how to be the superheroes of storage and the deliverers of disaster recovery. Oh, now Ben.
Yeah.
I don't want you to panic about this, but this off-site location is the Australian National Maritime Museum.
No, that's Auckland.
No. See, when we did the rehearsal, we had this as Joel's house, but I do not think that it is believable that the storage guy has this glorious waterfront location as his home. Ben tells me that in Auckland, waterfront properties are cheap. However, we are in Australia now, and everything is expensive. So, your favourite customer, that is their location. They are right there on the water. This is them. And you don't need to worry, because Ben has been in there and worked with their team and made a really elegant solution, which has meant that all of their digital stories are kept safe forever in the magic of the cloud. We're going to tell you more about that later in our case study. I'm going to assume that all of you are still following the old rule of three, which says that we need to have three copies of our data. We need to have it. We need to have two copies on different forms of media, and we need to have one in an off-site location, which should be ideally 20 kilometers away from our primary location, 20 kilometers from an airport, 20 kilometers from a city center, 20 kilometers from, well, everything, really, I guess.
Anything you can.
Yeah. And I think in this scenario that 20 kilometres is probably not far enough. Also, when you have floods, 20 kilometres might not be far enough. In fact, now I'm thinking about it, we're in Australia. It's a very dangerous country. 20 kilometres is probably not enough. But you do what you can, right? This is Perth. Do I have anyone here from Perth? Oh, look at that, they've all come.
That might be all the delegates.
That will be all of them, yes, because delegates from Perth, that is 6% of the Ignite population. So do reach out and say hello to someone from WA, because they are a minority, almost as scarce as the women in the room. So make Perth welcome, make women welcome. What was I gonna talk about? Oh yeah.
Lightning.
The lightning. The lightning, this is what we get in Perth. So we don't have the floods, generally it's pretty dry over there. No earthquakes and no tsunamis, or rarely. But we do get these. We had these last weekend, not this exact one. This one was last year in Perth. Why I have this one up is because last year in Perth, this occurred, and it was quite as dramatic as it looks. And there is a suburb a little bit outside Perth where they have two data centers. Maybe they have more, but they have two really big data centers. One of them is a glorious tier three data center, which is really, really beautiful. I don't like to admit that I have a little thing for data centers, but I do.
Beautiful for a data center.
It's a really beautiful data center. They have power coming in from two separate grids. They have network coming in from two separate providers through two separate exchanges. They have solar panels on the roof. They have a generator in the basement. They have all sorts of stuff. I did ask them in an end of the world scenario whether it would be safe to hide out there, and they said it probably would be the best place in Perth to come. And then I asked them how long they could withstand against lasers. They said 3 hours without flinching. That's pretty good against lasers. They may have been kidding about the lasers, but it is a really good data center. The other one is a global integrator, and they had government and banking in that data center. During this lightning storm, one of those two data centers went dark for more than a day. So I think apart from the 20 kilometers, the other thing that you want when you're looking for an off-site location is that your data is safer there than it would be in your own location. So I am going to talk a little bit about disaster recovery. How many people here do disaster recovery tests? Every 3 months? These two guys here every 3 months, that's impressive. That is impressive. I used to work at a place and we did a disaster recovery test every year. What we would do is we would declare disaster. We would all walk out of the building. We would all go to another building. We would switch over the phone lines, turn on computers, and off we'd go. That disaster recovery test does assume that the location that has gone down is not your primary data center, of course. It was good enough for the higher ups. I think it's not probably good enough for anyone in the room here.
Yeah, and there's a whole lot of other DRs too. I mean, I've done DRs where you take offline your actual DR replication while you're doing it for a week, and you spend a whole week of effort trying to cut over, then cut back and replicate data. It's not that fun.
That sounds really hard and really inconvenient.
Pretty much.
Yeah, and I think that's probably why a lot of people don't do testing, or they don't do it very often, because it takes a long time and your stuff might be offline. Your business might not be running while you're doing that if you're really replicating the real scenario. These stats were all taken from an IDC white paper, and they said that there were one in four organizations that never test DR at all. Two out of those four said that when they did those tests, the tests failed. And the fourth one, I think, is probably lying. Or, you know, it's one of these three guys here. I wanted you to imagine that for a little while, actually. Maybe imagine that you're all lying on a beach in Bali. Getting lost in that scenario. A fire breaks out in your comms room back home, probably from that air conditioning unit that has not been repaired for 4 years because you can't get the budget for that. How many of you are confident that the team you have left behind while you're on your beach in Bali, unable to get home because of the ash cloud, could restore all of your company's data, could bring up all of your systems, could get everything running?
Pretty good.
That is good.
Trust your coworkers.
Yeah, I hope you are looking at these guys, because you should definitely go seek expert advice from them afterwards. Unless Ben tells you everything you need today about how to set up an easy and safe scenario. He's going to try.
No, nothing's ever easy, but we just try and make it as simple as we can.
It's pretty easy, eh? Easy compared to the old days. Ben's got a combination of three systems that he's going to use, which is going to make it look like a seamless and easy solution for you, so that you can end up being that superhero for your organizations and keep everything safe. Oh, here are our superheroes. I did initially rename these guys to be Store Simple and Azure Backup and Azure Site Recovery, but Ben and I got in a massive argument about which one should be Robin, because he thinks that Robin is not a real superhero, and I think that, you know, he's a secret power behind the throne and he's doing a lot of work in the background. But hey. Anyway, Ben is going to use those three solutions to show you how you can create something very easy and pretty automated, and it will use the right tool for the right job. So there's stuff that you need that doesn't need to be brought back quickly, and there's stuff that you need that does, and there's stuff that you need that you're prepared to pay a little bit more for, and there's stuff that there isn't. So he's going to separate all of those things out for you so that it's easy for you to know which thing to use for which. You're totally blocking me. There we go. Okay, and so I am going to hand over to Ben now. Oh, he had put on the notes, I noticed, that I should ramble on now about how awesome I would look as a superhero flying around the clouds and doing DevOps.
It's all about the clouds.
Which is true. I would look awesome in that cape. And that reminds me, yeah, if anyone does know where I can get a cape like that, Abby Unicorn Sticker you can have, so come see me afterwards. Otherwise, I'm going to let Ben take over now.
Thanks, Michelle. That's great. I'm going to go through some of these different technologies and walk through them. I'm not going to really dive super deep into any one of them because we actually have specific sessions where we're doing that already, but I will show you those session IDs to go into it into more detail later on. So I'm going to show you how these products work, quick run through and examples of where they fit, how they run together, and the odd unicorn might pop up too, thanks to Michelle. So one of the first things I want to do is I've never used a word cloud. I hate them. So anyone who's used a word cloud in their presentations, Michael, this is get even. Basically, we're going to talk about a few different things. I don't know how bacon got in there, but it just did. We've got also, you know, some other things like Michelle, TEDx talk. Go have a look at it. And we're going to go through basically a lot of the different concepts. The thing is, word clouds are kind of a little bit wishy-washy. I'm going to try to show you some real things that we have and customers and people are using today and have in practice, rather than just give you some kind of marketing stuff. So when we talk about our business continuity challenges, there's quite a few out there. We've all been there, right? I mean, there's reliance on people. We actually need people who know how the skill set and know how to do things. Our retention, if we're talking about backup or DR, how long do we have to retain things depending on the data set? It's quite hard. It's challenging. How do we keep doing that? Data's not exactly shrinking. And how do we actually, you know, make it so that we're controlling the cost and doing something about those costs? I mean, is it really the best conversation to have with our board or with our executive team to go and talk about doing a DR site and paying for hardware that we may never use? We hope we don't, but we do it from a risk perspective. So there's a lot of different challenges around there. And we're trying to make a lot of these easy. So we talk about things like our automation. We talk about using the cloud as a DR site. Tighter integration. So talking about our different services and bringing them in together and starting to simplify a lot of these details and compared to what we do today. So this gets really, really hard. I've been using this for a fair bit now, these figures from the digital universe. But it's hard today, and with the amount of data we've got, we're looking at a 40% year-on-year growth. So 2020, we're talking about 4.4 yottabytes. How much data is that? Well, for each one of you sitting in the room, you're generating about 1.7 megabytes per minute of data, which is a little bit more than a 1.4 meg floppy disk. This is a Windows 10 installable. You can get these out in the reception area. I have had to explain to people what a floppy disk was before. That was quite fun. They thought it was a 3D printout of the save button. But it's a heck of a lot of data when you visualize just that amount of data being created every single minute and how quickly that we could fill up like a garage just by ourselves, let alone every person on the planet. It is getting more and more challenging to protect it. And it already starts off pretty challenging. So one of the solutions, and there's a few people in the audience who have experience with this, I can see, and is our Store Simple solution. Now, this is a hybrid cloud storage array. And what it basically does is it is a physical storage array. It's highly available. It's pretty much what you expect from storage, redundant controllers, power. You've got in-place upgrades. It'll do things like dial home. It'll do all these great things. It'll also do tiering between SSD and SAS disk. And then, finally, what makes it a little bit unique is it'll take the data that's cold on the box, and this is sublun tiering. It'll take that data off to the cloud as we start to fill the appliance up. Great way to get into the cloud. We're doing some smarts around that data. We're doing inline deduplication, inline compression, and before it moves off premises, we do inline encryption as well with a key that the customer owns. This is really easy because suddenly it's doing that whole hybrid cloud scenario where you get to put in your data center. It's just storage. Use it, abuse it however you want, and you're using that cloud as that highly scalable location. And then as well as this, it will back up the data. It'll use array-based snapshots, which are really, really fast and efficient, to back the data up and take it up to the cloud. That data in the cloud can then be restored to any other Store Simple appliance, the same one, a different one, or it could even be used for in the event of a DR. We have virtual appliances sitting up in Azure that you can use and leverage as well, so you can use the cloud for your DR set. And when we talk about the workloads we focus on with this Store Simple solution, this is very, very focused on things like unstructured data, the data which constitutes probably 85% of what we have in capacity, maybe more, maybe less, depending on what you do, and taking those workloads and managing the whole lifecycle for those workloads on one of these boxes. A two rack unit box can do up to 200 terabytes of production data because the majority of that data is cold. And when we look at how this works, little deeper view, it's ice guards are connected, 1 or 10 gigabit connected, and then connects up to Microsoft Azure for the management service, and then connects up to Azure for storage, and is this being recorded? You can also connect to other cloud providers as well if you the need so to fills you. Trying to think of a nice way to say it. And of course, we can go up here and then bring up the virtual appliance inside Azure and access that data anytime from anywhere and connect it to our machines up in the cloud. And this is really, really simple to use. There's not a lot of changes to your infrastructure. I'm just going to quickly run through a demo and show you just how we could restore a file right now. Switch over my laptop, that we may have lost. So going to, that server's dead, going to my Store Simple server here on site. This is a physical Store Simple machine that we have connected on site. So if I can connect into it, it was working before, we can go in and restore and see some of the data we have residing on there. If the demo doesn't work, we'll call it down to the demo guys, I'll just show you the restore step. But we can go here, we can protect our data and access it in Azure. So the Store Simple service is all managed from the Azure portal. So we can go down here and we can see Store Simple. We can see our Store Simple manager service here. We can actually go and view multiple devices, everything we're doing, and we're running from a one single pane of glass. From within here, you can look at performance, you can look at capacity and utilization and what's going on. So in the event here, I've actually got a few Store Simple appliances. I have a physical box here stored on premises in our Singapore data center. It's got a physical machine connected to it, which I just can't connect to myself right now. I swear to God, 40 minutes ago, it worked fine. So that box has gone down. Actually, we can bring that in. That's good. So our Store Simple on site's actually gone down. And Michelle had about 20 terabytes of unicorn pictures on there.
It's not my fault.
She really, really wants those unicorn pictures. And we can go up into our backup catalog here, and I'll go down to my physical Store Simple appliance that I can't access. And we'll find our Ignite volume, our demo volume that we're using for today's session. I can go down to this volume for this point in time, I've just done a date range, and I can clone this volume. This could be a DR test or a full DR failover simulation, and we'll present it up to our virtual Store Simple up in Azure and call it Ignite Restore. And let's bring that up in the cloud on our virtual Store Simple in Azure. And where this sort of matters is because we can do these large file server data sets that we're focusing on and we want to do this on. So restore here and let's present it up. And so this data, this volume now is restoring to a totally different appliance. The data wasn't already on that virtual appliance, but we're taking it up there now as a copy. And when we go down here, we can go and view our Store Simple Azure virtual machine here. And we'll be able to see that volume come up. If I can get my resolution all okay. So we're going to go to our disk management here, scan for our new disk, and that volume will come up, and we can start to see the data pretty much straight away from that volume and the data and the information we have on there from the snapshot being cloned up. So we'll see if you get your unicorns back, Michelle. Cross your fingers.
High five.
Gee. So see how that's going here. It's still going through the clone operation here. When we go into our actual virtual Store Simple appliance, we can now go in and see there's my Ignite container with my Ignite volume in there. And it's connected up. It is actually online. We can go and modify this. We could grow it. We could shrink it. And what I'm going to do now is make sure I connected it to the right machine too. Because, of course, human error comes into things a heck of a lot. Scan disk. I may have done this incorrectly. Sorry, guys, probably there's been a mistake here on what I'm connecting it to. It'll be the demo VM for Ignite, not the other demo VM. Sorry, Michelle. At least you know it's real, guys.
This is why I told him he should record all his demos and just play them and then pretend everything was perfect.
Isn't that cheating? I've done that before. And we can go and scan our disk down here. And of course, you don't want human error like that to come into it too, which is why we want to try and automate as much of this as possible going forward too. And once we get that all sorted out, we should be able to go down here and actually see our virtual disk, which has come up here. I can see it's come up as my G drive. I can go and explore this disk. And the data that was sitting there, Michelle's unicorn picture, is now accessible. We can get it up online. And this is her first one. I think she did herself. And then there's the aspirational unicorn as well, which is where she kind of wants to be. But we can get that up. We can access it in the cloud, and it's great. It's really, really straightforward and easy to do as long as you haven't got the human element like me. And allegedly, I know what I'm doing. So switching back over to the PowerPoint now, that was pretty much a quick walkthrough of, you know, doing a whole DR test or DR scenario. The next bit I want to show you is Azure Site Recovery. What I'm going to do here, I'm going to kick it off before we actually even start walking through what it is and how it works, because it'll take a few minutes to bring up a test machine. So I'm going to go back over to my demo screen here, and we'll go over to our recovery services. We can provision vaults here for backup, for DR, for different things. And I'm going to go into my ASR vault. And we can go into our protected items. And we can see our different VMM clouds and everything else we have up there and what's going on. So let's go over and have a look at what we can do with this data and how we can actually recover it. So let's go to recovery plans. And we can see there's a recovery plan built here. And what I'm going to do just for the example we're going to use is do sort of a test failover of one of these sort of items today and go and do this. I've got to remember where it is, Michelle. It's been a while.
This is why I said go back to your room and prep. And he went back and napped.
So. It's only a 1 hour difference between here and Sydney, mate. You've got no excuse.
I've got no excuse at all. But we can go in here, and I'm going to go down into my MTC ASR lab. Try and get rid of the images down the bottom here. And we can see our machines, and we can go and do test failover, see if they're replicating properly, and we can commit them, and we can put them in place and actually have them fail over. And I should really have had done this properly. Sorry, guys.
I could tell my store simple story.
You could tell your store simple story.
When they first started pushing the Store Simple devices out, all of the SSPs were really encouraged to try and find customers that they would be ideal for. And Darian is our SSP for Store Simple, or he was. He's a South African man, and so he's very loud. He's very loud, and everyone in the office. Whenever they have a joke, poor Darian is always at the butt of all of those jokes. What happened here, though, was that they were really encouraged to find great customers for the Store Simple devices and to also encourage people to go to the Azure cloud and do this in combination. So you'd get a little prize if you put a Store Simple device in somewhere and you'd get something linked to, you know, how you worked, your KPIs, your tick marks if you encouraged people to go into the cloud. Problem is the Store Simple devices are so efficient and they compress. They compress all of the data. So what happened was wherever he put the Store Simple device in, it compressed the data down so small that the amount of stuff actually being replicated through the cloud was really insignificant, and so he didn't win any prizes.
Sorry about that, guys. I just had to do a browser refresh of all things. So I can go here. I'm just going to kick off my test failover here. So we're going to select the virtual network it'll deploy to up in Azure, which is my ASR test network, and we'll kick that whole failover off. So has anyone ever used Azure Site Recovery today? How'd you find it?
Not so good on VMware.
Not so good on VMware. Just wait, please. And there's some sessions too. We've got some partners running, and if you can wait, you know, in the near future, we've even got some future updates on that. Basically, Azure Site Recovery has a few different scenarios we look at with this. So we have the ability to failover. We can do Hyper-V to Hyper-V, site-to-site replication. What you're doing today, do automated failover plans, do test runbooks, everything else. We can do VMware to VMware. We can also go through and do Hyper-V to Hyper-V using SAN to SAN replication. And then finally, The big two ones we're doing here is actually VMware up to Azure, physical machines to Azure, continuous replication. We can do our failover plans there. And also Hyper-V to Azure. And these are really, really good things, and they're pretty useful to do. So have a whole sort of automated scenario, use the cloud as your DR. And as well as this, we have migration options too, which I'll talk through a little bit as we go through the different presentations. But we can do our things like our planned failover. So we can go and test a DR scenario, automate all the steps in there. I mean, we've probably done this. It's become an acceptable thing, but automate all the steps and start using the DR and using the cloud as our DR site if we don't want to use the other locations. We can go and do our unplanned DR scenario. We want to fail over. We can go through all the automation steps. We know they work because we've tested the scripts. It's pretty much down to the big green button approach. And you can go and go through this scenario and the steps here. We can use it for our testing and staging. And this is pretty interesting. We can go and replicate machines up to the cloud, do a test failover, then break them off and leave them up there. And we can keep using these to test our applications. Here's a full copy in an isolated network of our environment that we can use for our test and dev. And finally, one of the things that we don't actually talk about that much, but we're seeing a huge amount of people using it for this, is actually migrating workloads to the cloud. So not just a single machine, but putting multiple machines, maybe our database server, our application, our web front ends, and replicating those all together, then doing our planned failover to Azure. And for our actual migration, we don't just do it from things like VMware Physical or Hyper-V. We can also do it from some of our friends like Amazon and get data over to Azure pretty easily. And these are some great scenarios, and we've seen this sort of being taken up quite largely within the region so far and across Australia and New Zealand. And in all honesty, while people are starting to look at things like DR as a great option to use ASR for, and a lot of people are planning around this, right now in the short term, the majority of people are actually using it to migrate workloads because it's so quick and easy to pick up and lift and shift those low priority, maybe non-production or low priority workloads that you're going to start to move up to the cloud. What does it support? So this is a list of what we've got support for and what we've been validated for today. You know, a lot of the standard things we talk about, you know, we've got Oracle, we've got SAP, Exchange, Caveat on high performance disk, and other workloads are all supported up there. Some of the things we don't support today is solutions where clustered disk is required or other solutions like that. Oracle Rack's not supported. Non-DAG-based Exchange is supported today. So there are scenarios you have to go through and look through here properly to understand what you can and you can't do. And I'm going to show you how, hopefully, that virtual machine has now made itself available for me to use. And we can see what it's up to. So if we go in here, we can see this machine's up and running here. It's going through its failover steps. We can go and view the job and where it's up to and how much of the automation steps it's been in here. So it's right now starting the virtual machine. It's actually brought it up. It's cloned that machine, brought it up into another network, and started it up. And now it's just applying all those steps. You could have other scripts in there to change IP addresses, update DNS entries. And what will happen now is it will be available, and we'll see it actually come up here as a virtual machine inside of Azure. And once that started up, we could go in there, we could access that for our DR purposes. So you can see it's starting up here, ASR, Hyper-V, SQL 01. And it will actually come up, it'll be accessible, and we can actually start using that data. What'll happen then is it'll sit there for that job. It'll actually be there, and we can go and see where it's up to, and we can do our testing, we can go through all those steps. And when we're finished, we can say we've completed our DR test. It doesn't look like it's fully come up yet. So what I might do is come back to that a little bit later in to show you how easy it is to access and get into. It's always quicker in person. So the final bit we're going to look at is backup. Who likes backup? You like restore? Backup and restore are exclusive, right? Azure Backup is a product that we've been doing a huge amount of work on over the last 6 months. We've had a dedicated team start to pick up and work with this. In the last 6 months alone, we've seen a huge amount of features come in, so a big reduction in cost around the Azure Backup cost. It's the cost of storage in Azure plus a subscription cost per machine you protect. Things like data egress are bundled in and included. Our data set, our source size data set, used to be limited down to a pretty small number of 1.7 terabytes. We now do up to 54 terabytes. on the source side. You can do a lot more than that in the Azure backup side itself. And other things too, like retention. If you've used DPM before, it used to be a bit of a bugbear that you could protect for maybe 6 months online without using tape. And then after that, you know, you have to use the tape-based backups. We've now, with Azure Backup, got 99 years of backups in there. So you can set up 30 dailies, 52 weeklies, and maybe then, who knows, you know, 10 years of your monthly backups and put it for 99 years of the yearlies, if you really want to. There's a lot of options around the way you do it. And the architecture actually really matters because there's a different way. A lot of people will talk about backing up to the cloud. And some of them are great solutions and they're valid and they're very fit for purpose too. So we can use cloud as a storage target. Store Simple does that, for example. We've got a lot of smarts built in around that with the deduplication and the way we bring data back. And there's other products too. And that's great, it's easy. You just write to an APIs and you copy data up to the cloud. It's really hard to get data back from though, because you have to pull virtual tape formats back to where your computer is, crack them open, bring out your files. So it's pretty slow for that. The other way is backup software in infrastructure as a service. And again, it's very, very good. It's valid. It's got use cases. And some of our partners will be talking about that. In fact, I'm talking with one of them tomorrow about it too. The only challenge you have around here is you've got to run compute inside of Azure. Because you're doing your restores inside of Azure, you're treating Azure a lot more like a physical data center of the past, except you're running your compute up in Azure, and you have that compute overhead cost as well. What we're doing with the Azure Backup Service is it's a fully cloud solution. All the software is actually built in and integrated in. There is no machine running in the cloud you're replicating to that you think of in traditional data center scenarios today. It is replicating to that backup vault. When you actually need to get data out, we've built in the egress cost as well. So if you go, I've got to restore data, how much is it going to cost me to restore 50 terabytes? Not that you ever want to, and you shouldn't have to, but in the event that you may have to, how much will it cost me? We've actually bundled that into the service so you don't actually get any surprises. And of course, the scale of the whole scenario as well is pretty massive. So instead of having to have, okay, I've got this many machines being backed up inside Azure, to Azure, I need to run multiple machines in Azure IaaS to actually support this. We can actually pretty much, for all intensive purposes, do this to an unlimited scale of capacity and machines. And we've got this all through centralized management. We can do standalone management, we can do centralized management, and different scenarios there. And some of the comparisons you can do here are pretty simple about why it's efficient. So if we look at running a machine up in Azure versus running it as a service, there's a fair few things here about why it helps, particularly around the unknowns, like how much data do I need to actually get back out of the cloud? And these scenarios can be very, very different too. We could back up our virtual machines, which are wholly based in Azure, through Azure Backup. So image-based backups of these machines. We can do it from a central location and central management console using something like our Data Protection Manager, or now we also released Azure Backup for Applications, which is centralized management, backup to disk to cloud, and you can do it at a SQL level, Exchange, SharePoint, individual item restore, and multiple machines in the one location. And then if you've got a lot of people or maybe small remote offices where they actually want to manage their own backups, or you've got a little backup agent, we've got the Azure Backup agent for server or desktop. I'm running it on my Windows 10 laptop, and I have been for quite a few months now. And that will let you do that backup restore directly from your device. And we encrypt all that data, and of course, the egress is all included there. So I'm going to quickly show you how we could restore a file. I'm going to do it to a machine I've got in Azure. So on my laptop here, if I can go and find this, I should do better this time, Michelle.
We'll see.
On my laptop here, I've got one of Michelle's favorite pictures. I think Regan, we wrote this for you. And Michelle doesn't want to lose this again. A machine goes missing. We've lost our laptop. And I'm backing this up today with my standalone Azure Backup agent. I've got to update it. Sorry. But you can go in here. You can create policies. You can register the machine. You can back up. You can recover data to the same machine. But what I want to do here is actually take this data, and I'm going to recover it from my standalone machine up in Azure, which is running Azure Backup. So we can go here. We can register this server with Azure Backup, so we're not using a proxy. And there is a Vault credential, which is valid. You have to download from Azure itself. This is valid for 3 days, And you put this in, and this will do your connection up to the cloud. The next thing we need to know, and gee, I hope I remember this, is a password. So we have to actually remember what is the passphrase that we actually save this under. We need to save it somewhere. Doesn't like me today. Sorry? This is a different one. Thanks, guys. Generate passphrase. Great. And this won't help me here because the passphrase has already been generated. So I've got to try and remember what I actually put in here, Reagan. I blame you. Of course, you can't get your data that way. I'm having a demo disaster today.
Yeah, this is bad.
This is really bad. So it's protected. This is really funny how much time I spent rehearsing. I mean, if you recover this data, it's then a matter of going and we can say to from another server from the same server. So I can go and browse the files and folders. I'm cheating, restoring it to the same machine. And we can select the volume and location that we've restored it to.
We're going to be hanging out in the speaker's lounge afterwards. You should come there and force Ben to perform all of these again in front of you.
This is a standalone agent. This is files and folders aware. And while this is restoring, we actually have it through the Azure Backup Application Agent. This is DPM. The Azure Backup Application Agent looks and feels the exact same. The main parity differences is the application agent doesn't do tape-based backup, it'll do disk to disk and then to cloud and not to tape. You can go in here, you can see things like SQL servers. You can go and create a backup policy. You can say I want short-term retention to disk and then online protection up to the cloud. The Azure Backups agent for applications will not have this option for tape. You can do this from DPM today if you have it. You then select the on-disk retention. And you say, how often am I actually synchronizing the data? Because it's not going and reading through all the data. It's taking the change data up and just synchronizing it through. It's then creating recovery points where it actually reads through and does VSS and confirms the data. For an application level, it does an express full backup where it does the actual validation of the application itself to make sure that is a good consistency point. You still have the 15 minutes, but that's crash consistent. You can then go and do things like consistency checks. If you actually come offline for a fair while, and you missed points, you can actually confirm your source size to your backup to make sure it's there and in place. And then you decide what you're backing up from the cloud. I might do a week's retention on site, but for things like my system state data, I may not be too worried about that for, you know, 3, 4, 5 weeks in the future. Or even, you know, looking at 7 years of that, I don't want to keep 7 years of data. So we select what we want to store for our long-term retention. And then we can do how often are we taking the data up to the cloud. You can do it up to twice a day, which I have here. And then how do we actually want to retain this data? We can look at keeping it for, as I said before, as an example, 62 days of actual 2 points in time, twice a day we take up to the cloud. We can then do a weekly retention, 52 weeks, and a monthly retention of 60 months. And then, of course, we can go and say, okay, we need now our compliance, our long-term archive, and do 10 years worth of backups. And we put that in place, and that's all done, taking the backups up to Azure and being integrated into applications and centrally managed. In regards to restoring that file that we want to see, we can go here and we can see which backup we want to restore from. So I've got a manual one I took at 12:44 p.m. when I really was testing, I swear. And we can go through here and we can restore our data. We can view what we're backing up and we can see the file we actually want to get back. And we can restore that file back down. And this is just the standalone agent. And take this data and restore it to that single location that we want it in. I'm just going to put it here for a random place and get access to our data, and it will pull it back from Azure to restore the data. If you're using the application-based agent, you can actually go and restore it from disk and get a quick recovery. But you might only be keeping 1 or 2 weeks worth of data on disk. But this is taking care of your offsite of the data and getting that data back on site. I don't know what the internet is like here today. It's not a huge file, but it's generally pretty quick to actually get the data back. So we'll probably see that take a little bit to find the data in Azure and then pull it back down and complete the backup. So I might switch over to that, back into that in a second when we actually know it'll be finished. So we'll five. So apart from me not remembering passwords today, sorry guys, one of the big things to call out is what's fit for purpose. We're seeing different products, and it's quite common for me to have people say, how do they actually, you know, each one seems to do a bit that the other one does. Which one do we need? How do they work? Where do they fit? And just because you can do things like eat your soup with a fork, it's much, much easier if it's a stew, doesn't mean you really, really want to. It's not the most efficient way to go about it. So I did this really easy table to look at what fits where and how it works. So, I mean, things like Store Simple is primary storage. It's focused on really large, high-capacity workloads. It'll be downloadable, Michael. And we can go and view this data, and, you know, you can use this to back up our data through snapshots to the cloud. We can do DR by using another appliance or a virtual appliance. We could even use it for migrating data up to Azure. That said, it's not so great when you're talking about the persona of the virtual machine itself and going through the steps. Even though you might have the data in the cloud, it doesn't always make it easy to get back to, particularly for things like a database or a VHD file, and definitely not possible for something like a VMDK file. We look at Azure Site Recovery. It is not primary storage. It is not doing long-term retention, but it is replicating to the cloud. It's replicating and converting physical machines, VMware virtual machines, and Hyper-V machines. And it's continuously replicating those and providing a really low recovery point where you can talk about recovery in the minutes and a fully automated recovery itself. So the plan itself can be automated for test or for the actual unplanned outage. And then Azure Backup itself, you could kind of call backup a DR scenario, but I don't really want to go through the steps I just did to restore my data, to take a massive data. Again, you've got the data. It doesn't mean it's a true DR if you have to actually go and restore it, reconfigure things. So really, really good to back up your data that's residing on other technology inside your data center. And you can back up your SQL, your Exchange, and there's a lot more we can do around that. But not so good to actually do things like DR and recover that data at a low recovery point. And, I mean, we can talk about, you know, sorry, I'll show you how we can actually fit these in just quickly into into the Azure Site Recovery product and start to automate the different products and where we may use them. And you can see here my recovery job actually did complete, Michelle.
I had everything.
Occasionally it works. So I'm going to jump into the Azure portal here. The first step we want to look at is seeing how do we actually go and restore something like, you know, our Store Simple data. How do we bring it online? We may have that 20 terabytes of Michelle's data, pictures of unicorns, and that's great, but we can't really efficiently do that through something like Azure Site Recovery. We have some limits around Azure VMs, which are just restrictions on IaaS itself. So when we look at the automation, I have got some automation scripts I set up here for my Store Simple appliance. And so the first thing we do is go through, we can go in and clean up our appliance. We'll remove all our test volumes, all our data that we've been playing with, everything else. And this is a script that we actually have published on our MSDN site as well. You can go and get a copy of this. And then our next step will be to actually initiate the Store Simple failover process. And this will be cloning our volumes and bringing the copies up. And then finally, once we've actually brought up that Store Simple and actually put the data up, and our virtual machines, our personalities, our personas have come online, we can go and connect those iSCSI disk up to our Store Simple appliance. And within an Azure Site Recovery runbook, we put this in through here. So this one will work. Sorry, I've gone into the backup vault by mistake, Michelle. So we need to go. We go into our recovery plan here. We can see our line of business apps. And what we do is we go and insert these automation plans in here. So we might say first, okay, let's put in our script to actually start before the groups actually start up, before they shut down on the other side. And we'll call this, you know, fail clear. And we'll select our automation account, which is still simple. And then we'll put our runbook in, which is actually clearing up the virtual appliance, firstly, to make sure if anyone's gone and played with it, it's all clear, it's all empty. And then we'll go through and we save that script. And the next step after that is to go in and we'll put the script which will actually mount up all the volumes for our Store Simple appliance to the virtual appliance. So let's put that one in now. And we go again down to our Azure Site Recovery Store Simple automation account. And we will do our Store Simple failover process. And give it a name. And then we'll save that change as well. And then finally, we'll go and put the step in. And this step will actually be the last step because we need our virtual machines to be up and running before this kicks off. To actually go and actually bring up the disk and mount them up to our machines running in Azure IaaS. So connect iSCSI disk. Call it, give it a name that makes sense to you. And put it into our plan. I put it in the wrong spot, so I'm going to actually try and move that down. Can't in the wrong spot, so I'll delete that out. Go back down to here and put our script in here. So after group three, and connect our iSCSI disk, and we're done. And so what we've done there is actually gone and set it up so in the event of a DR, if we have a very large data set, we're actually bringing that up with the Store Simple virtual appliance and connecting to our virtual machines, which we've started up and actually have the persona, have the shares and the permissions set up on them that we see on premises. And then what happens if we've got maybe something which is a low priority that we actually want to restore in Azure? We're not storing it on Store Simple, it's on some high performance disk, something like a data warehouse. It's not valuable enough, we don't need it that day. We can get this back in a few days, but we still want to make it simple to actually go and recover. So again, very, very similar here, and we want to go back and get this through. We'll go down to our automation scripts, and we can actually go through and set this up to connect up to our DPM. So from our DPM machine itself, we're going through here, we're using PowerShell to connect to DPM, and bringing up the connectivity into the cloud. So connecting to that vault where we've got the data. And we can go through here and set the details up to connect up to our subscription for Azure. And again, when we go through and put this into Azure Site Recovery, it simply goes down into our plan. And we'll go into our recovery plans and add that script in, this time at the end. And we'll add that script in to actually connect that DPM server that we've recovered over to Azure and connect it up to the vault so we can recover our data warehouse data. You know, maybe a few days later, but make it a lot easier and simpler. So no manual intervention required. It's actually already connected up there, and we've got it in our runbook, and we have it as part of our plan. And that's sort of examples how you can use ASR to sort of bind a lot of these together and how they can fit for purpose on different work sets and workloads. And when we look at where we're going with this as well, we've got things like our operational management suite, and we're bringing a lot of our products into here so you can actually start monitoring and viewing your data in here. So things like Azure Site Recovery can be viewed from this Azure Operational Management portal. You can go and analyze data and logs as well as go and get a single pane of glass to see, are my machines protected? How many runbooks do I have? Are there any jobs which have run in the last few days? Have they failed? Same thing for your Azure backup. You can see how much data is actually protected up in the cloud and if any errors actually occur. And this is great to actually go and see one location and start viewing all your kinds of information and data. And we can even go and perform other things like our SQL assessments and health checks too. So realistically, when I looked at it today, I mean, we're talking about three pretty different solutions. They sometimes get mixed up and sort of understanding where they fit best. I mean, you can make these work for any of those kind of scenarios if you tweak them enough. You can eat your soup with a fork, but it's kind of not the best way to do it. It's a bit tricky and a little bit hard. So I kind of went ahead with the demo before it even started. The quick one I'm going to show you before I finish here is the actual virtual machine in Azure, which should have come up by now, and what it actually looks like when we see it come up in the cloud. So that SQL machine I kicked off before for a test failover. Let's go and see if it's come up here. We can see it's come up here as a test machine, SQL 01 test. We know it's a DR test. When we go and look at this machine, we can see it's come up inside of as a D2, so we've selected our performance type. It's got some transient SSD. And we can actually confirm all the performance and the virtual network and what its IP addressing is and where it's gone through. So that ability to go through and actually look at where our machine sits. And when we go down into our Azure Site Recovery plans itself, it's then quite easy to go and see where that machine's at. So we can see right now it's sitting at waiting for manual intervention. Because it started up, it's ready to test. And now it's just saying, hey, we need you to make a decision. Are you still testing? Have you finished? Do you want to break this off? Or do you simply just want to complete your task and keep going as usual and go, machine started up and could be accessed. And we can clean up our test environment automatically afterwards as well. And that's really what we want to see in a DR scenario. Ah, you stole the clicker.
You gave it me.
So, thanks a lot for that. I'll let Michelle get back to some of the interesting stuff about how people are using it.
So this is Ben's favourite customer again, the Australian National Maritime Museum. If you have not seen it, you should get down there. It's in Sydney on Darling Harbour, so it's right there on the water. They're a very cool place. They will let you climb all over those tall ships and go inside submarines. And it is absolutely guaranteed that if you bring your kids there, or Ben, they and him will be exhausted by the end of the day. I've tried to put with the little table there which solutions they have used with which scenario, so that you can see that they are using all three of the solutions that we've talked today, but for very different things. They have 80 terabytes of archive data, which probably seems like a lot, but this is not just, you know, invoices and stuff that we want to keep for 7 years. Their archive data is part of the National Archives. This is stuff that is our part of our nation's history. This is stuff that they have to keep forever. And when I say our nation's history, I don't know whether you noticed my accent, but I am Australian now, so. Oh, and the other thing that's interesting, I think, is that are there any devs in the room? It's okay to admit it.
Nobody.
They didn't really need to create a disaster recovery, place for their dev test environment, because obviously it's not prod. But what they did was what Ben was talking about before, where he said that they used Azure Site Recovery to migrate the dev test environment up to the cloud, because they recognize that those devs have spent a lot of time creating all of that code and they want to keep it somewhere safe. The Australian National Maritime Museum.
Just quickly there too, they're also protecting machines inside of Azure, using Azure Backup at a virtual machine level, so those machines are being actually protected every day. So because it's not production doesn't mean it doesn't matter, because we have to pay developers. I don't know why, but we do. Sorry, there's no one in the room. But you know, it's obviously all that work we put into it is important, so they have to be protected.
But they're my favourite types, the devs.
I'm sorry.
He's always so rude. Totally lost what I was going
to
say.
They migrated their machines up to Azure.
They migrated the machines up to Azure, kept them all safe. That's what I was going to say. So previously, before they implemented these solutions to create this scenario, their off-site location was actually their admin building, which was 200 metres away from the museum itself. So in the tsunami that we showed at the start, and I'll admit, tsunamis are not common in Darling Harbour, but still, both the admin building and the museum would be whooshed away. However, now, thanks to the glorious work that Ben has done with their team there, all of their digital stories are safe forever, and of course the ships would just float away in a tsunami, so that would be fine.
Will it really?
I think so.
Oh, good.
This is Ben's little boy, gazing around in awe and wonder at all the exciting things that he has seen, because what they've created here is a playground to interest our future generations in our country's history. And I think it has definitely worked with him. Either that or he's looking for his sister.
It's behind the statue. Why does that matter?
Why does that matter?
What does this matter and relate to that? What's that going to help?
I've totally forgotten what I was going to say on this slide.
What about businesses that crash after a DR?
Still got nothing.
So if a major DR, what happens to the business?
In the In the DR recovery slide with the IDC stuff, it did say that there were a lot of businesses that never.
Oh. Sure, there's another slide.
Well, is there another slide? What's this? Oh, this is your slide, though.
That's what DR matters. What happens to a business?
Well, just snatch that back from me, then.
Press it down. We didn't rehearse this, obviously. No.
He's been adding slides behind my back.
So a lot of this matters for DR because we've seen it. I mean, a lot of businesses actually have a major DR, never actually start up again. It's actually rather sad. I mean, you wouldn't want to see an organisation like a museum or something else that really matters to us and not open its doors again because of a major outage or disaster. And even then, if there is a major disaster and the actual outage is sufficient, the whole loss in brand equity and everything else that we see out of it actually means that even if it does open, quite often within 18 months, that business still goes under. I think the statistics around that are talking about 75% of businesses after about 18 months have a major outage due to the loss of, you know, customer trust and everything else do go under. Up here, we talk about purely how many don't open their doors again, which is still significant at 40%. But an outage can be more than people going, I can't get to my email. It can actually affect that whole business because everything we do today doesn't really just revolve around people in an office accessing their data. It's about how us having our online systems working and what our customers think of us. If you walked into a supermarket or a shop and you went to buy something and they couldn't process your order and couldn't let you pay for something, you probably wouldn't want to go back there again after you've been waiting for 15, 20 minutes in a line of angry people. And these are things that all matter when we talk about DR.
Okay. Remember to complete your session evaluations. There are prizes for people that do that. Remember, 5 is the highest, and you know, you should be kind to us because we were the first session of the day. And you know, Ben's a featured speaker, so he's super famous.
Well, I proved that today too. Really proved it today, guys.
We're going to have the session will be up on the Ignite site, so you'll be able to download the slides already, so you didn't need to take too many pictures. Well, I hadn't stood there holding up my 5 fingers for long enough
five.
To infiltrate their minds.
One of the big things, too, is we've sort of gone across some different technologies here. I can't go super deep on anyone. In the interest of time, because we're trying to show how they fit and how they work together. It's quite a good opportunity because we've come in first to talk about how they work and where their places are, to go and have a look at some of the other sessions we have around these technologies, in which cases where people are diving a lot deeper. We have things like some of our product team are over right now in the country going in depth into Azure backup. They're doing the IaaS-based backup and also Azure backup from hybrid scenarios, backing up your on-premises application level. We have one of our partners doing a deep dive ASR session, and they're doing a big demo of Azure Site Recovery, not just with Hyper-V, but also with VMware. And they're doing the test scenarios and failover of that as well. We have another one of our people has come over from Canada, from Microsoft, to talk about using Azure Site Recovery and also using it as a migration tool, not just a DR tool. And then finally, what's the last one you put in? Michelle, did you put one of Gavin's sessions in? No.
Dexter. His name is Dexter.
Dexter. But go and have a look. Are there any questions anyone want to ask about any of these and scenarios? Yes.
That's the one you did the site recovery completion when you put in some comments. Has that been to some kind of audit tracking for presenting back to management that you've done some testing?
So the question was about the comments after a test failover and if that's actually accessible to show we've been doing it. And so if an auditor comes in, for example, you can go, hey, DR test. Yes, it is. We keep all that information in Azure. And you can also view it from that OMS portal too, which can analyze that data. There was one at the back there.
When will ASR support V2 ARM machines?
I can't answer that in this public forum. It's something very important to us, and I wouldn't imagine be very long away. So when do we support ARM-based V2 VMs in Azure?
Is that something you know, but you can't?
It's something I know, but I can't tell.
Oh, you should come to the speaker lounge afterwards and then just like whisper it. Don't do it in front of press people. Be fine.
Any other questions?
Yeah, the Maritime Museum, the store simple appliances, how many do you have servicing all those drives and things?
Well, look, they're not using it for all their data. I mean, this is a scenario where they've got their whole front of house system is based on Dynamics. So a lot of their websites, they also use one of our partners, Sitecore, for their their website and everything else. That's not running on Store Simple Storage. They're using us for file share, home drives, archive data. They had one of the 7000 series, and they're still looking for the older model, Store Simples, and they're looking at using that for, and they're using that for the archive data. And they've got one of the newer ones, a bit like yourself, and they're using that for the production file data. So A&M still using DPM? Yes, they are. They've got you know, SQL application servers, everything running on premises.
So how does that integrate with Azure backup and DPM?
DPM. So what I showed you there when I was backing up the DPM console, that is DPM, yes. And it can back up to Azure instead of using tape. If you're not already licensed for System Center and access to DPM. We have the Azure Backup Application Agent. You can go and download it. It's free to use. And that is pretty much feature parity with Azure Backup, with DPM, sorry, except you don't have tape backup support. So if you've got stuff which isn't resigning on Store Simple, for example, you can use that to back it up. Instead of taking it to tape, you take it to cloud for your offsite location.
Find us in the speaker lounge afterwards. Session will be up on the website. There's loads of other cool stuff to go and see. We've both got other sessions that you can come and see during the week. So look out for us, and maybe Ben will actually put his recorded demos up there as well.